Good evening. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you're listening to Mondo Eros live on bbsradio.com. And yes, we are live tonight. We are back with original broadcasting, original programming for this broadcast. And I'm very happy because, you know, we're coming close. This is the beginning of December, and we're coming, you know, into the end of the year. And I'm very grateful because it was on December 31st, New Year's Eve of the previous year, that I made my first debut here on BBS Radio as a guest of Veronica Monet. And a few weeks later, Veronica was a guest on my show, and well, guess what? Veronica is here tonight.
Yes, I am. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you back, and I'm happy to say, darling, that you were my first.
Yes, I like that. I like
if
that.
Only
I
it could have been,
Jerry.
If only could have been in the true sense of the word. I think
well,
my life would have been a lot better.
That would have been a long time ago for both of us, I'm thinking.
Yes. And but it's been a really great year. I'm very happy to be doing this broadcast, and I'm very happy to spend this time with you tonight. I always love to talk to you.
Thank you. Great. Thank you. The feeling's mutual.
Oh, that's nice. I was really intrigued by a broadcast you did called Sex and the Middle-Aged Man, and I think we could use a little bit of that to talk about, but also anything
sure.
that you find of interest that you would like to say. Before we go into that, why don't we just get your current view on life and what's going on in the news right
just
now.
Just kind of a check-in?
Yeah, let's check in with Veronica. What do you think of this whole thing with Tiger Woods that's going on?
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up because there's actually some suspicions that she, the wife, Tiger Woods' wife, may have done something violent like break the window of the SUV with a golf club. That part's not in dispute, but that instead of breaking it out to rescue him, she might have actually been doing it to chastise him or out of anger. And,
yeah, that's probably what caused the accident in the first place.
Well, I think so. I don't, I think there's actually a little bit of husband beating going on here for Tiger Woods, and it's very interesting that this comes up at this particular time because, you know, he really represents middle-class values and, upper middle-class to be sure, and actually, of course, he himself is very wealthy, but, you know, what he stands for is an upper middle-class value of playing golf and living a life of some ease, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have potentially some violence going on in this marriage, and a lot of people tend to like to think that the violence is associated with people of lower class. So I think it's very timely because I just debuted a brand-new documentary on the Women's Entertainment Network on Tuesday, so day before yesterday. And the topic is women who batter their husbands. And my former husband and I actually went on to talk about our 27-year history. We have both battered each other, and we both have been battered by each other. And we wanted to share that with the public because we really want to bring this conversation out so that we can stop having conversations that are so gendered around family violence. I want to stop talking about men as perpetrators and women as victims and start talking about family violence. Because, you know, a really scary statistic is that about 70% of the women who are rescued from domestic violence relationships also abuse their children. So, I mean, it's a serious problem. And violence overall, you know, most violent crimes have actually gone down in the United States, but interestingly enough, female violence is actually on the rise.
Wow.
So that's what I have to say about that news.
the other thing also about it is the so-called injuries that he received to the face that the blood was, there's no blood found in the car, and there's also hinting that maybe she scratched him on the way out.
Oh, my God.
That's
and it's so taboo. First of all, it's very taboo for men to admit it. And then second of all, it's really interesting how, you know, like if you look at the situation between Chris Brown and Rihanna, you know, who are two very, they're mega pop stars in the music industry, and a very young couple and seem to have everything going for them. But, you know, Rihanna was the one who actually initiated violence in the car that day. And, of course, Chris Brown, being a male, stronger, you know, more powerful, he finished that violence and you know, put her in the hospital. And there's no excuse for what he did at all, and I think this is unfortunately where our conversations go a lot of time as well. You know, we're kind of like, we're very childish around the topic of family violence. We're, oh, well, he started it, or who threw the first punch? Like, that's really important.
Right.
And so I'm not interested in that. I could care less who threw the first punch, and it doesn't matter who threw the first punch. Nobody should be punching, you know, and if your partner is trying to hit you, walk away. This is not an excuse for you to go jiggy on them. However, I just find it really sad that we completely missed the point that women are also, you know, initiating violence in the relationships. Because that's a problem. And if it's not a problem, if we can't wrap our minds around the idea that men are actually traumatized and damaged by the violence that women perpetrate against men, at the very least, as a society, I hope we can start being concerned about the fact that violent women are also going to be violent towards their children, you know, and they're not as big and strong as the men that these women may be hitting. So, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that when women are violent towards men, it does hurt. It not only hurts physically, but it hurts emotionally. And there's men who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, and, you know, and this just goes to show how gendered and sexist our conversations about this are, because we talk about battered women's syndrome. It's a phenomenon that is very, very real, but it's not battered women's syndrome. It's battered partner syndrome. So if you are in a close, intimate relationship with another human being and you are battering them, they can enter into a state of mind where they start to feel like they deserve it, and they become, you know, very submissive to the violence.
Yeah, it always seems to interest me. Like, there was a commercial that was running, I think it was for VA, and it showed the wife or the girlfriend or whatever smacking the guy on the head. You know, oh, you could have had a V8, you know. It's like,
right.
You know, and if a guy did that, well, you know, I remember, of course, years and years ago, this is going to be probably, and I think you can still see them on YouTube, in the late 60s and the early 70s, where they would show the high karate commercials.
Yes.
Remember those?
Yeah.
You couldn't do that today. There's no way you could show that. You could make a commercial like that today with a guy taking a karate pose against women, even though it was comical. There's no way that it could be done, that it could be shown. It just
wouldn't be.
It wouldn't be allowed. Yet, of course, we always hear the old stories, especially like in old films, about the wife with the rolling pin and the frying pan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's, you know, and it's interesting because we either ignore it or we make light of it, or we cast the men as the bad guys and the women as the victims. And I, you know, here's the thing. I used to be a trained volunteer for a center against rape and domestic violence. I actually worked for a domestic violence shelter for women. And, you know, you wear a pager, and in the middle of the night you have to go talk to the wife or the girlfriend who has just been battered, and you're trying to talk her into getting a restraining order and leaving the relationship. And it's very frustrating because most of them go back.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's sad. You don't know if you're going to see that woman alive the next time you talk to her. So, you know, domestic violence is a really insidious problem, because it's one of those few crimes where both the perpetrator and the victim choose to stay in proximity with each other. They don't want to leave. And there's an awful lot of excuses that they make. And if we are watching the old movies, you know, couples, especially women, would slap men. And sometimes the man would just take it, or she might beat her fist into his chest. And next thing you know, they'd be making love.
Yeah. I think there's a strange kind of programming. I always see these things through the gaze of programming and conditioning. And it just seems to reinforce this idea of possessiveness, that this is my property now, and like, you know, and how dare you, and yeah, here's this guy who's got, you know, you would think he's got everything in the world, and yet obviously there's something that's not happy for him, that he's going outside. Yeah, I think it's this idea of possessiveness and this idea of monogamy that's the problem.
Well, that's certainly a contributing factor. You know, and it's interesting, you know, just like when I think about our prevalent models for relationships, there's, you know, the idea of being monogamous, and how does that actually shake out in practice? Well, people lie and cheat.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then I have friends who are in open relationships, and how does that actually stack up? Well, a lot of times it just means they're home watching TV or something. And it's kind of interesting to me because, you know, in a lot of ways, the people who have open relationships are not really having that much more sex with other people than the so-called monogamous people. They're just being honest about it.
Right.
And that honesty builds this really strong connection that can transcend divorce even, you know. And so a lot of the, you know, poly people I know are still really, really good friends with their exes. I certainly am. And you know, friends doesn't really cut it. And I think about my cousin. She's divorced, and she's been in and out of several relationships. But the people that have been in her life are still in her life. It's not like she stops talking to them. It's not like she stops caring about them. And yet the monogamous model is like, okay, well, you're done with them, and it's time for you to move on. And if you, you know, are still talking to them, then you need to go see a therapist and get over it, you know. And it's just like, I think that's a very strange concept of love to me, because then people are like toilet paper.
Yeah, I don't think it's love at all. I think it's just it's a contrivance. It's just programming and conditioning. It's a way to sell houses and cars and furniture and all. I think it's just part of the whole consumer culture that we're in. I don't think it really it's not really about relating or love at all. And that's quite interesting about the poly people, in that because they have the permission, they may not actually have to actually go out and do anything, but because they have that, they have the freedom, that's basically all they need. And I think that's probably what a lot of these high-powered, high-pressure guys, I mean, you know, you think that this guy has everything in the world, but yet he has been micromanaged since he was a kid.
It's true.
You know, and so you think he's got everything in the world, but you know what? He doesn't really, because he doesn't have his freedom. He's trapped in a box. And, you know, now the whole thing is going to be, oh, my God, am I going to lose all my endorsements? Am I going to lose everything that I fought this hard to get? You know, I'm just saying that the system in itself is just crazy. Now, of course, you know, lying and all that stuff, that's not right either. But at the same time, you know, to get scratched and hit, you know, get a golf club used against you, that's not right too. That's wrong. And obviously, he's taking the full brunt. He's saying it was my fault entirely. There was no other thing. I'm totally at fault for the accident. So he's stepping up and taking one. Which, of course, all we can say right now, let's just have contrary evidence, is that's what it is.
If if a woman did that, we would say that she was suffering from battered woman syndrome.
Absolutely.
And we would want her to get help, and we'd want her to do the right thing and make the perpetrator accountable and insist that they get help.
Right.
I mean, you know, if in fact this woman has done what it looks like she's done, she's very dangerous.
Yeah, I don't know if I would want to stay in that house.
Well, and don't they have children?
Yeah, they do.
So, you know, that you're subjecting, it's the same argument if it's got a vagina as if it's got a penis. The argument with a male perpetrator is that you're subjecting your children to that as a role model. They're learning to emulate that behavior, and of course, it's a dangerous environment for them to be in. And
and you're showing them that, you know, that violence works, and that you don't try and be reasonable. You just let your emotions take over, and boom, that's it.
And it's interesting that we have so many sexual taboos too, that we kind of have this this cultural value that when a woman is faced with a unfaithful man, when he steps out of the relationship and he lies about it, that she's entitled to physically abuse him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like he asked for it, and she's not
going
to take
it. Yeah, well, what do you expect? Well, you asked for it. Well, no, right. No one deserves that. You know, even if he did that, even if he was a lying scumbag, I'll give you that much, which I'm not saying that he is, but let's say that's true. He doesn't deserve, you know, you can yell and scream, but the old statement, your right to swing your fists ends at my face. It's no excuse to do that to someone, to commit violence, physical violence against somebody, even the destruction of property. You know, that's breaking property. That's still not right. I mean, it's probably less worse than, you know, being physically assaulted, but still in all, it's not right, and it does not set a good example to children growing up. I just think that there's a whole lot of conversations that can go on about this. I think he could probably do a lot more if he did come out and told the whole story. But then again, you know, he's got to protect those endorsements.
Well, yeah.
That's why he's there. That's why he's staying there now. He's got to protect those endorsements, and also, you know, the rest of his wealth.
Yeah.
I think there's even stories now that she's getting a big chunk of change to stay married to him.
Oh my God! So he's paying her off, huh?
He's paying her off. Yeah.
Oh God, that's terrible.
I mean, there you go again. Here we go, an exchange of money. Now, isn't it much more moral and much more ethical to go visit your friendly courtesan than to do this kind of thing?
Oh God. Well,
and so much of these high profile marriages, they really are contracts. They really are arrangements.
No, actually, you know, it's funny. This summer I was on the local Fox News outlet as a relationship expert, and they wanted me to comment on, infidelity with these all these high-profile politicians who are being unfaithful.
Yeah.
And they're like, going, why are their wives taking it? And I said, are you kidding me? Their wives are simply going on TV to pretend to be upset. Yeah, because that preserves the image that, you know, they couldn't possibly admit that, you know, I mean, Hillary could never go on national TV and say, hey, I knew about Bill and I could really care less. I've got bigger fish to fry, you know. I'm Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
And before that, I was looking to be the Senator of New York. I mean, what do I care about him getting his dick sucked somewhere?
Yeah.
But that would see ruin her political career, because then she would be this cold businesswoman, politician who, you know, and we want our women to be sexually conservative,
yes,
and jealous and possessive and, you know, easily offended in that respect, because we seem to have this idea that women are supposed to enforce society's moral code.
Yes.
So the man can stray, but the woman must bring him back in, correct him, and put him on the right track. And if she doesn't do it, then who will do it? Because we can't count on the men, because, you know, boys will be boys.
Yes.
Yeah, so women are, like, very heavily penalized when they become tolerant. So, no, but anyway, I said the same thing. I just said, oh, come on. Political families are, you know, they're worried about the public persona. That's not, you don't have the slightest idea what their actual arrangement with each other is. I mean, a lot of times, I know people, I have a cousin who was married for 30 years to a lesbian. He was gay, and she was a lesbian, and they just wanted to raise a child and put on the appearance of being normal. You know, it's not like they were a heterosexual couple. So and by the same token, I think political alliances, you know, are forged in the same way. It's more about how can we help each other's career.
Absolutely, it's a contract. It's a business relationship. And in terms of Hillary, she actually picked up points for that when that happened.
Oh God, yes, yes.
It made her more human.
She became the injured woman too.
Yeah, it made her more likable, and so.
What is it about our culture that loves a woman that suffers?
Yeah.
I mean, what does that say about our culture?
I think it says that we have a pretty dysfunctional, if not, I'm going to just say, outright sick culture, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if anything that 2012 does, I hope it brings this down. If it does do something, you know, let's bring this nonsense down, and you know, let's let go of the earthquakes and the volcanoes, and that's pretty old hat. How about bringing some of this nonsense down? I'd like to see that change.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So instead of focusing on how we're going to have disasters,
let's have some truth.
Yeah.
Let's
honesty,
have some truth.
Transparency.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's time. It's time for the human race to stop dealing in stereotypes and caricatures of ourselves. You know, it's time for us to see ourselves beyond gender roles and expectations. It's just such a simplistic shorthand that really obliterates the individual. And, you know, we're smarter than that. We should be able to see people as individuals and take them on a one-by-one basis.
I hope so.
Insist that, you know, because you have a particular genitalia, that your behavior has to be a certain way, or that your moral code should emulate this or that, you know. But we're still stuck on that right now, which I think is pretty sad.
Yeah. Well, I was I got an email today from Betty Dotson, and she has a new posting on her website called Overblown and Undersucked, and she says it's always about our expectation when it comes to sex and relationships. Same song, second verse, it ought to get better, but it just gets worse. And and it says about how expectations and stress are killing our sex lives. There was an article called Sex, Love, and Reality that I had sent her, and she was responding to that. And she says, everyone is so disappointed with partner sex that maybe it's time to focus on masturbation or take a vacation from sex altogether.
Well, you know, I have a theory that people put all their eggs in one basket in this culture, and I think people are spiritually starved.
Yeah.
Our life is supposed to have a lot of different dimensions to it, you know, a physical dimension, emotional dimension, psychological dimension, sexual dimension. It should also have a spiritual dimension to it. And if you aren't feeding that spiritual side of yourself, you really will start to have an addictive relationship with everything, whether it's food or work or love or sex. You'll start to try to suck everything out of that because you're not getting all your needs met. And, you know, the spiritual dimension is really fed through finding your passion in life and showing up fully alive and fully awake and fully aware. And that is surprisingly difficult, to be fully awake and fully alive.
How did your path help you? Now, we just talked a little bit before we went on there, and you mentioned about the pagan holidays. How has that helped you?
Well, pagan holidays haven't helped me because I don't really celebrate them.
Right.
And I'm not identified as anything, by the way, other than eclectic. So I don't identify as Wiccan or pagan or Christian or anything like that. But as an eclectic, I take what I want from whatever resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to go to Christmas Mass at a Catholic church, I will. And if I want to go to a Samhain ceremony, I will. And so it's nice to have ritual and ceremony, but it isn't... not a regular part of my life. I get most of my spirituality from 12-step groups, and what I love about those is that nobody's really, everybody's so diverse. You got a lot of different people in those meetings, and some people you really don't want to even associate with, and some, you know, that are pretty cool. But the freedom is real important to me, to always be able to be authentic and to be where I am in this moment. Matters to me a great deal. So my spiritual path really starts in the 12-step movement 24 years ago when I started going to a 12-step to recover from addiction and alcoholism. And from there, I went to a lot of others. I did therapy, you know, because I've got the psychology background, so that resonated with me as well. And I have tried a lot of different spiritualities, so, you know, everything from Science of Mind Church. Recently I started going to a Universalist Unitarian Church or something like that. I don't even know how to say it properly. That's how much of a joiner I'm not. but I love going to places where people are focused on celebration or ceremony, ritual, consecration. Those things do resonate with me, and I think we're kind of missing that in our culture, where we don't really acknowledge our changes, you know, like we go through changes physiologically. We don't acknowledge a woman's menarche, like her first period. We don't initiate boys into manhood. We don't have any kind of respect for the wisdom of our elders, and I'm not talking about obedience. I'm just talking about, for God's sake, you don't have to reinvent the wheel when somebody, you know, twice your age has already done it. Learn from them. Don't be an idiot.
Right.
You know, and if some of the stuff they're doing doesn't work, well, just don't emulate that. You know, but if they've been able to obtain certain results in their life, it ought to be worth paying attention to. And we're losing this huge resource.
Yeah.
So, when I connect with some of the ancient ways, I think it's more about, like, okay, some of the stuff we've lost, like our connection to the planet, which seemed to help us live more in harmony with nature. And I really resonate with Native American spirituality for that reason. I love the concept of all my relations, you know, which is basically that we're related to everything, the rocks, the plants, the trees, the animals. I like that because I like the sense of circles instead of hierarchies. I like the sense of being connected instead of having power over. And I think those are things, they're very important. But, you know, I can very easily go from, you know, Native American spirituality to more of an anthropological approach by studying the bonobos, you know, ape-like creature, which is very poly, very bisexual, very pansexual, and very peaceful. And so I draw from a lot of different things, but on a daily basis, I use prayer, I use affirmations, I like to light candles, I like to meditate, I do a mantra meditation. And, you know, it all works. It all works, conscious breathing techniques and bringing that into sexuality so that, you know, you're doing conscious breathing while being sexual.
Yes.
It's huge. I mean, it's just, you know, a totally different place to go with sex. So, and then I don't envision sex and spirituality being separate from each other. I believe, like the ancients did, that sex is a doorway to the divine. So, I guess that's in a nutshell. I don't know how well
I
answered your question.
I think that's really great. That's, you know, that's why I, you know, and enjoy so much talking to you and have, just not here, but also in our private conversations. That there's just so much there, and I, you know, I really honor you for that.
Thank you. Well, it's quite a journey, this thing we call life, and I, yes. You know, if there's one philosophy that really helps me that I would love to share, it's the idea that we never stop learning.
Yes.
And we never stop trying new things. I think, you know, we can get pretty entrenched in our habits, and then we stop pulling in the things, new stuff. If you're not growing, then you're dying. If
Absolutely.
You're not moving forward, you're not staying put. That's what a lot of people think, they're staying put, and it's like, unfortunately, that's not how it works. You are either going to have to be working in a forward motion with your life, which usually means, you know, learning new skills, learning new topics, take workshops, take classes, travel, start a new hobby. Just, you know, but don't get entrenched in your routine. You know, a little routine's great, but you want to be able to move out of it.
That's really good.
Yeah. And that will, you know, that keeps things alive and vibrant. But the other thing that I think is a huge obstacle for most of us is our reluctance to experience unpleasant emotions.
Yes.
And those come up all the time. It's just part of life. So, you know, to face those unpleasant emotions and actually have them, that's the big thing. It's just allowing the unpleasant emotions to move through you. We all get, you know, pretty scared. Oh, I don't want to feel that. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to look at that. And then it actually becomes more of a destructive force, which was our big fear all the time, you know. It's like if you just have the feeling, then it would come and it would go. And then it moves on and you can move on and be happy.
Right. You have to, I think it's a distinguishing between, let's say, perhaps an unpleasant emotion and perhaps maybe a physical situation. But I can understand definitely where you're coming from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just think, you know, there's just so much, there's so much deprogramming and deconditioning that one has to do. And just a simple acceptance of life, and particularly a simple acceptance of sexuality, it's like, you know, going back to our first discussion, well, why would he do that? Well, you know, because men do that. Everybody does that at some point. You know, it's just that insistence that, you know, that this illusion has to be maintained at all costs.
Yes, I agree. And I think what we need to do is stop having conversations about why people step out of their relationship and have sex with other people and start talking about how we can live honestly in integrity.
Yes.
You know, our focus culturally and societally is just so ass backwards. It's about, you know, making sure that your genitals don't touch somebody else's genitals, but nobody talks about actually sharing what's in your heart.
Mm.
And then, you know, our focus becomes that instead of the love. It becomes this really artificial overlay over the human experience. Whereas, you know, I think most people, when they fall in love with somebody, I don't think they fall out of love. That's, you know, but they will try to convince themselves that they have, and they'll be very disappointed when they see that they still have feelings for an ex or a former lover.
Right.
and that's not realistic. It's just not realistic. But we really do shame people around that a lot because we have this taboo around loving more than one person at a time. And, you know, when I was 17 years old, I was writing about this. I couldn't understand how people could call that love, you know, because I thought the monogamy thing seemed very artificial to me. And I was, that was when I was 17, and I never even heard about the word poly.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but I just, and I have all these poly friends, and, you know, the poly people spend so much time learning how to communicate honestly and have so much integrity in their relationship, where they have conversations about the most detailed things, like if you're going to have sex with another person, are you going to use a condom or not? You know, what can you do and can't you do to be, you know, in integrity in the relationship? Are we going to talk before, after, or during this other relationship? Do we have to meet them first? They have to be, you know, all of that is like this living, dynamic relationship that is constantly being attended to. And they go to workshops and all this stuff. And then the monogamous people, they walk down an aisle, say I do, and then that's it. You know, the conversations oftentimes don't go past, you know, who's tucking the kids in and who's taking out the garbage.
Yeah.
And so the emotional life that these two people are developing does not get shared. And then, you know, they wonder 20 years later why they don't have a thing in common with each other. They haven't been talking about anything that matters to them. So, and the same thing with, like, the BDSM people, right? They get a bad rap because they like to have a little pain with their pleasure. And some of the ways that they play look really violent and, you know, objectionable to so-called vanilla people, people who don't play like that. But what's interesting to me is how much more loving and respectful their sexual interactions can be with each other because they spend so much time getting to know what drives their partner's libido, what their partner likes and dislikes. And you have to, you know.
Yes.
And then they take classes and you know, get really proficient in providing these sorts of pleasures for their partner, whatever their partner's into, you know. They go and they study it, they learn it, they practice it. And again, you know, so-called vanilla people don't even know there's other ways to please each other. A lot of times don't take any classes, don't read any books, don't even have conversations about what do you like? What is it that I'm doing for you that works for you or doesn't work for you? And I'm convinced that, you know, one of the reasons there's so many women who aren't even having orgasms in their marriage could be because there's like a lot of marital rape going on. You know, not in the sense that they're getting forced against their will, but that their partners haven't even ever really shown any interest in finding out what works for them. There's just this assumption that there's this one way to do sex. And I can't tell you how many men I've talked to who say, like, well, why would you need to take a class in sex? And I'm like, oh, please go home and ask your partner.
Yeah, exactly.
Why can't you
get off the way through intercourse, you know?
I know. Go ask your partner. I'm sure she could tell you why it would be a great idea to take the class.
Well, actually, you know, the truth is this. You know, the one, if you look at Betty's podcast, the same question keeps coming up over and over again, and you can see how testy she gets at times. Well, how can I come with my partner doing intercourse? You know, and you can, you know, well, you know, you're probably not.
Yeah. Well, you know what? A lot of people don't understand. And, you know, I what I'm going to say here is not necessarily something that all the medical doctors are going to endorse. But, you know, I'm certified as a sex educator through San Francisco Sex Information. The latest and greatest information, you know, so far is that the spongy erectile tissue that constitutes a man's penis is actually in the fetus as it's developing, both male and female. And so that erectile tissue is present in a female fetus as well, and it goes into the wall behind the vagina. But there's not the same concentrations in all women. or at least that's the prevailing, you know, opinion around that at this time. And sadly, we haven't done a lot of research about sexual female response. But if that's the case, if this is true, that some women actually have erectile tissue inside their vaginas, it would explain why some women really are turned on by penetration.
Yes.
And other women, it's like a dead zone. They can't feel anything. Well, they probably just don't have the erectile tissue in there, so you wouldn't expect to be able to achieve sensation there. Now, the one thing that all women have, of course, is a pelvic floor and a G-spot.
Yes.
That area is there. But again, some women really love to have it stimulated directly, and some women find it way too intense. But now, this last year, we've discovered that women have a whole bunch of erogenous zones. There's one called the A spot. That is it's located on the anterior side of the cervix, so the upper side of the cervix, way, way at the base of the cervix. They call that the A spot. Then the U spot is the tissue right around the urethra. And then, of course, the G-spot is about an inch and a half in on the side of the vaginal wall that's facing your belly. So there's lots of things to play with there, but if you're just, you know, sticking a dildo or a penis inside the vagina and moving it in and out, probably not going to achieve a lot of satisfaction there. If you go deep, you can hit the A-spot. If you curve around, you can hit the G-spot. If you stay at the entrance, you're going to actually be playing with the legs of the clitoris, which extend all the way down to the vaginal opening. And those are really the spots that would work with intercourse. But, you know, just sticking it in and out of the hole, not such a good way to turn on most women. I'm not saying some women don't find it hot. I'm just saying most women probably going to wonder, why don't I feel anything?
Yeah.
I was like, well, you're not really supposed to. And that's the other thing, Stephen. Why do we have such a focus on procreative sex? As, you know, everybody, the people I deal with are always, well, I can't get an erection and I can't get lubrication. I'm like, these are not the only ways to have sex.
Right.
If you're wanting to make babies, then that's the way you do it.
Right.
But, the idea is that is sex is silly. This really comes from, you know, well, it really comes from a lot of Christian dogma, which is always about procreative sex is the only legitimate way to have sex. So it has to be penis-vagina sex, or you're going to hell.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, what I discovered, what felt really good to me was when I started doing what was called outer course, or frottage.
Right, where you're actually using friction on the genitals, right?
Right, you're partially clothed, and you both generally are wearing underwear. But that was amazing when I first started doing that about, I guess it'll be like 15 years when I first started doing that. And I was, for the first time, totally in my body. I was completely in my body. I had all the sensations that they talk about in Tantra. I had the full body experience. I had sensation in my nipples. I had no desire or need to ejaculate because I didn't want to lose the sensation. And as I continued doing it, up to my recent time, it just got even more better, more incredible. It totally turned off all the programs and all the tapes in my head. And it's like, you know, to me, that's Tantra. When I read about the tantric experience and the full body orgasm or the oceanic orgasm for a man, to me, that's what it is.
Well, this is the whole thing to me about getting away from the idea, you know, that sex is bad for one and starting to allow it to be a part of your spiritual life.
Yeah.
Whether you call it Tantra, conscious breathing techniques, whatever. Lately, I've been kind of adverse to using the word Tantra because there are so many people who think they own the word. And it's interesting to me, I recently was at a dinner party where all this conversation about, well, that's not Tantra. And I get emails from people, too, because I'll post an article maybe from somebody who's claiming to be teaching a tantric technique. And then I'll get emails from somebody who says, that's definitely not Tantra. And the only thing I could be sure of is when somebody tells me it's not Tantra, that they will no doubt be telling me what is Tantra. It will never ever be the same thing that the other person's going to tell me. So they all disagree with each other.
Yes.
But this shouldn't be the point here. We're not trying to figure out who the real Christian is, you know?
Yeah.
we're trying to help people have more pleasure and hopefully more connection. And I, however you do that, whether you want to call it Tantra or something else, I could care less. Sacred sexuality, my new favorite word.
Yeah.
I used to use it all the time. I'm going back to using that one because nobody seems to be just trying to step in there and set up some religious dogma around it. And what I love about sacred sexuality is the idea that you are accessing this deep spiritual aspect of yourself and your partner. Now, whether you're using eye gazing or shared breath or, circulating energy through your heart chakras, or extending sexual intercourse that, maybe goes hours, days, and abstaining from an actual orgasm, there again, we make the orgasm like the centerpiece. And I had an experience similar to what you're talking about. Extended intercourse led to this amazing kundalini awakening.
Yes.
Was it really a kundalini waking or was it just a cura? I really don't know, nor do I care. Whatever it was, it lasted for a whole month.
Wow.
Call it what you will. It was so delicious. It was so amazing. I would not touch myself for the world.
Wow.
I didn't want to lose that. So when you say did you experience something that was so exquisite that you wouldn't want to ruin it with an orgasm? I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
I would not want to ruin that by ejaculating or going forward into having actual intercourse penetration, because I know I would definitely lose all that sensation. I would go out of my body and back into my head, and all the tapes would start playing.
Exactly.
You know what this is to me? This is the experience of what I had before I had my very first ejaculation, where I could, I was starting to get hard, but I could have these incredible feelings, and I used to see all these incredible colors. I think this was my early, if you want to call it mystical experiences. And then, once that happened, and I think that's for a lot of men, once you have that first ejaculation and once you get over that, and you do kind of become hooked on it, if you want to say that, and then you lose this. You lose this wonderful full-bodied, full-embodied experience, and you don't get that back. Sometimes you never get that back unless you start doing something like Tantra, something like connected breathing, or until you do something like this, which is non-penetration sex.
Right.
And I can't see ever losing this, going back, and letting this go, because this to me is Tantra. This is to me is what I want to experience. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. When we start limiting our sexuality to the procreative sexual model, I think we really get shortchanged. And, as our bodies change, and as our hearts and our minds change, our sex lives should be changing. And that's the other thing that happens to people it's like they try to eat meat and potatoes for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
They never, ever try a new dish. They never, ever, sample new flavors.
Well, that's what I found really, really exciting about the broadcast you had done, because here was this man, 52, who, he decided to really go all out and explore all kinds of different alternatives and practices, and also more importantly, when he talked about he used a different term for it, but the term that I know it is radical honesty. where you tell the absolute bare naked truth about yourself.
Yeah, and what does that mean to you?
Well, it means telling exactly who you are, what you want, not trying to hide, not trying to present a face, a front that you think will get you approval and love. No, you tell, you're honest about what it is that you want and what it is you don't want. That takes a lot of courage to do that.
I think, especially
in relationships, it does. You know, because like, how can, you know, telling a woman, well, you know what, I really I don't want to get married. I don't believe in monogamy. I don't want kids.
Right.
You know, that's like, well, boom, that's next.
Oh, you've had a lot of women shut you down around that.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys get shut down with that. I think a lot of them just go off and do it. And yet, I think there's a lot of people out there who are having a lot of kids who probably should not be doing it.
You know, exactly. In this day and age, this idea that people need to make more babies is just so scary to me. Come on, guys, that's not what the world needs. The world does not need more babies right now. We need to take care of the ones that we have.
Yeah, but if you look at all the people, especially the right wing, they all point their fingers at Europe and they say, "You see them? They're not having babies. Their population is not being held up. And how are they going to pay for this? And how are they going to pay for that?" Yeah, because basically the system is one where Peter robs Paul. You're gonna have to think of something else. You know, you're gonna have to find a different way.
Yeah.
You know, you have to look for a different way to produce things.
I've actually seen some videos put out by religious groups too that want to have more babies than the Christians want to make more babies than the Muslims.
Yes.
Like,
that's the main reason also that they're.
And all
they
I can say to that is, God help us.
Yeah, because there'll be more of them.
Oh, God, that's just such a negative, cynical view of the world. I can't believe how many people are, you know, buying into that. My mother sent me this video, and she's like, this is why, the birth rate is very important. I was like, my God, what are you saying? We should make more babies because we're in a race against the other religion. What insanity.
Oh, absolutely. And then you have also, who's going to pick up for Social Security? Who's going to pay for that?
Yeah.
Who's going to pay for all the people who are going to be retiring? Yeah, because, you know, it's basically one big Ponzi scheme, you know.
It's true. Well, darling, I love talking to you. I'm looking at the clock, though, and believe it or not, my show's coming on right on the heels of your show.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you for being my guest tonight.
Anytime.
I just also want to thank you for being in my life.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you.
Because it's a truly pleasure. And I just hope maybe sometime in this upcoming year that I finally get to meet you for real.
Absolutely. Well, set up a. I mean, you know, I just would love to come out and speak to New York. So
absolutely.
Maybe we can. Make that happen somehow.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Veronica.
All right. Thank you. And I will catch you on the flip side, as they say.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And thank you for listening tonight to this broadcast. We will return next week with some new original programming on Mondo Eros here on bbsradio.com. This is Stephen Otero speaking. Thank you, and good evening.